Bible lovers love to see something that looks like Jesus in the Old Testament. Most of the time, it's what we call prophecy, by which we mean predicting the coming of Jesus, which is hardly the purpose behind the indictments spoken by Isaiah, Jeremiah, Hosea, Micah, etc., etc. Most of the time, what gets counted as prophecy has a whole lot more to do with the mess that is present and addressing that mess of bad behavior. And sometimes the indication is these people need help. That's where the Messiah stuff comes from. But most of these guys weren't thinking that far ahead. They were taking care of what was right in front of them. Let's just call it injustice, or in some cases, unrighteousness. We could call it sin, and we'd be right, but we would miss too much of what was really going on with that crude measure. Because Jesus was a difference maker. The difference maker. He does change things on the cross. And God blesses him with resurrection. It's a great story. But death and resurrection are not so much in the Old Testament. Just not in the way that gives much comfort to too many Christians. There's plenty of death. That's what we see. But dying isn't all that Jesus does, even. It's the way he dies. He gives his life. Little, if any, of the dying in the Old Testament is that sort of dying. Humble self-sacrifice. Most of it is other sacrifice. Even the story many love to superimpose Jesus on into an Old Testament moment is largely appreciated by Christians as a glorious statement of faith and righteousness on the part of that main character, not but almost committing other sacrifice. Not self-sacrifice. Abraham's almost sacrifice of Isaac. In that story, Abraham is obedient, for sure, maybe to a fault. And just as his hand begins the plunge of the knife, an angel stops the sacrifice of Isaac. Joseph's grandfather, by the way. That story is pointed to as much as any in the Old Testament as a type, as one that indicates the type that we see in Jesus. But I'm not satisfied. Maybe I shouldn't be. Abraham is not giving his own life. He's not sacrificing himself. He's humble, and he's humbly and obediently ending the chance that he'll be the father of many nations, like the stars. Isaac is the one who, ultimately bound now, comes closest to self-sacrifice in this story, but he's still not Jesus. It's hard to find that story anywhere in the Old Testament. Women may be better optional opportunities for that. Ruth's, "Whither thou goest, I will go," sounds somewhat like that. Tamar risks a bunch of her potential for the sake of justice. What was the penalty for adultery, except being put to death? So I've got some ideas too, even about Eve, but that's too much for now. Let's talk later. Suffice it to say that there are just not a lot of self-sacrifice stories to work with. So this poignant reception of his brothers by Joseph, I think, makes a good story of sacrifice turning out good, of losing one's life and finding it, as the Old Testament gets to have. It's the best option we've got. Now, granted, Joseph doesn't die, but his pitted dismissal to slavery in Egypt is at least a type of dying. So it is Joseph who becomes the agent of reconciliation with the brothers who betrayed him those long years ago when Benjamin, his only baby brother, was still a baby. He says to them, and will say again, "So it was not you who sent me here, but God." His embrace of Benjamin is matched by his embrace of them. Reconciliation happens because Joseph sees his dying into slavery, and I put dying in quotes, is God's way of raising up hope for his broken family. It's not everything that Jesus does, but it is a type of it. Down into the pit, then sent up by God for the sake of others. So let's fast forward to Tyre and Sidon and the coastal Mediterranean climes, to Jesus and his followers on the frontier. There they are trying to be all Jesus-y. And along comes this Canaanite woman, this nagging Canaanite woman. So Jesus starts the conversation by saying, "I'm only here for the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she will not relent. And down into the truth, she pulls Jesus and the whole lot. "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." And what started out looking like one thing, God meant for another. Now, before we go any farther, you need to hear me say, I'm okay with Jesus learning. I'm okay with his internal life progressing toward a greater truth, that greatest of truths, that like self-sacrifice, like dying on a cross. And that's what this nagging Canaanite woman gives him a chance to do, to look ahead and in a smaller way show something of how God can take one thing and mean it for another. This one thing of a covenant promise to a people and mean it for another. What Joseph does is to help us recognize the truth about everything that has gone on before, at least since his great-grandfather Abraham, and all those moments of humans trying to take matters into their own hands, especially his brothers and their hands. What Joseph does, Jesus does, and does it in a way to doing more. Does it so that all that has gone on before, suffering Israel's good intentions or not, can be meant for another, for the salvation of the world. Jesus is his own typological pointing. He dies a little that day near the Mediterranean so that the dogs get to eat the crumbs. He'll do more later. Amen.